Good morning, doctor, and thank you so much for explaining to us what is going on.
Oh, good morning, Dawn. Thank you for having me. I'm glad you had some good quality time with your sons. Oh, we both know how important that is.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah,
so
yeah, we talked about
launch right into the problem.
Yeah,
here?
And maybe at some point, maybe not even today, but we have to talk about empty. I'm not an empty nester yet, but I know that you are. And so at some point, that's a great segment to talk, because a lot of people this time of year dealing with that. But I do want to launch into what you're writing about and the new law regarding pharmacy benefit managers and what this really, you know, you've talked a lot. We've talked before about these much needed reforms, the middleman profiting, because we're always told, oh, no, no, they can't really profit. But there's this little loophole. So tell me what happened. And I think people don't realize that this was kind of snuck in at the last minute, right?
Absolutely. So, all right. So let me just paint a picture. Like, here's why your listeners should care. Okay. Like, y'all are paying more and getting less, right? And, you know, everyone says we're fixing prescription drug costs. Hey, Dawn listeners, are your prescription drug costs fixed? Maybe what you pay out of pocket even might be a little bit better, but your coverage, what Medicaid, what Medicare, what your commercial insurance is paying for your prescriptions is not going down. So overall, healthcare costs are going up. And like little secret here, like 2009, remember right before the Affordable Care Act was passed, we were told we were going to get affordable healthcare. Do you know we have almost doubled our national spend on healthcare since 2009? We're not paying less. We're paying more. It's not affordable. And we're talking about one-fifth of the national economy. I mean, my gosh, you know, wages are flat in part because the benefits that workers are getting are driven down by the healthcare costs that the companies have to spend. So why should we care about this? Well, the big insurers now own big PBMs. And, you know, I know we want to talk about this specific issue, but let me tell you how much these PBMs, these pharmaceutical middlemen, make for their parent company insurers. When Cigna bought the big PBM Express Scripts, one of the big three, their revenues tripled. Catch that. Everyone thinks the insurer companies are making all the money, but if your revenues are tripling when you buy a big PBM, this is, if you're going to follow the money, follow it right there. So now everyone is crowing about, you know, PBM legislation, and it's happening nationally. And you know, in Pennsylvania, we're talking about PBM reforms, you know, big stuff going on in Congress. And truthfully, it's actually across the aisle in both places that people know that it needs to happen, right? But in Pennsylvania, you can't make a law that for PBMs that covers all Pennsylvanians. Why? Well, because the law that we make in Pennsylvania will apply. It does not apply to employer-sponsored coverage that falls under ERISA. I mean, this is like boring, snoozy stuff, Employment Retirement Income Security Act. So that's why we do need some federal legislation. But we did have some PA legislation. And, you know, to give credit across the aisle, Representative Jessica Benham from out near Pittsburgh, a Democrat, introduced the bill in the House. And Representative or Senator Judy Ward introduced it in the Senate. Now, this bill was like kicking around since maybe April, and it was actually a good bill. But then the day before they had the vote in the House, the day before. How do I know? Because I'm busy trying to get ready for my empty nest, you know, moving my daughter, doing all like the normal things.
That's what they counted on.
Gardening, cooking, doing, you know, my clinical stuff. And like, and then I start getting calls from people in the House, and they're like, they've made changes, Marion, at the last minute to this bill. Well, you know, I'm no magician. I'm not hanging out in Harrisburg all the time. I'm like a recovering soccer mom who happens to pay a lot of attention to PBMs and the cost of health care, because it's untenable. I care about my kids, your kids, everyone's kids. And I get the calls, and then I'm asking about the changes, but I didn't really have time to read the bill until maybe a week and a half in. And then I read the bill and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And I told the representative who called me, look, you're going to have a hard time voting against this, because if you vote against this, people will, like, you know, come down on you and say you don't want PBM reform. Well, I supported the initial bill, but then with these changes that are in there, ridiculous.
Yes.
Now, both Jessica Benham, Representative Benham, and Representative Judy Ward were very responsible. They came out and at the press conference for this that happened at an independent pharmacy, they highlighted the positives for independent pharmacists in this bill. And that's important. Mm-hmm. Our independent pharmacists of Pennsylvania are, they're small businesses. You know, you talk about keeping things local, Dawn.
Yeah.
Agree. Because like when we don't have the independent pharmacists and we have the major big conglomerates like CVS and Walgreens, you know, CVS, that's in Rhode Island. So if you have CVS and their little mutant heart on their signs everywhere and they're running all the pharmacy, well, then your money's not going to your community. It's going to Rhode Island.
Yes.
So there were some good things that happened for independent pharmacies. You know, these pharmacy benefit managers that are owned by insurers, they used to just reimburse more to their PBM-affiliated pharmacies like CVS. They used to just give more to those pharmacies than the independents, and they drove the independents out of business. And worse yet, they would claw back money from these independent pharmacies. They'd say, oh, you missed this little, like, you didn't cross this T or dot this I, and we're coming back and we're going to take this money back from you. And so these independent pharmacists would go out of business, and CVS, you can go look on their website somewhere, unless they took it down because they tweeted about it. They would have a little like link that says, hey, independent pharmacists, are you tired of running a pharmacy? We'll buy it for you. Mm-hmm. Well, of course. More monopoly for them.
And you wrote in your article that more than 140 pharmacies have shut down in Pennsylvania this year. And
yes,
you point out beautifully that these are not in areas like, you know, the city of Philadelphia or the surrounding, you know, collar counties where, you know, you have plenty of medical offices, right? These tend to be underserved areas.
Exactly. It, rural areas, you know, Pennsylvania is a big rural state. And sometimes, you know, like, look, everyone has problems getting access to doctors, you know, hospital, ER waiting rooms are full. Some hospitals are closing, you know, these pharmacies are closing. Sometimes, like, that's the only place they can go if they have a question about their meds, or it's the quickest place. And pharmacists are well-trained. They know a lot about medications. So good things happen in this bill. Mm-hmm. But then along comes Josh Shapiro, and I watched him in a press conference. You know, he claimed that they stopped this process called steering. They put a halt to steering. Steering is when the PBM steers the patient towards their PBM-owned pharmacy, like mm-hmm. CVS. Their CVS Caremark is a big PBM. You know, they can do things like reduce your co-pays and then, or suggest that you go to a CVS pharmacy, and, you know, they steer the patients towards them. Well, I'm going to call that Josh Shapiro is, he's not speaking mm-hmm. fully truthfully on this. And the reason is because the last minute changes, they gave exceptions on steering, significant exceptions.
Like what?
So the big PBMs are allowed to steer towards their own specialty pharmacies. Specialty drugs or medications used for very complex, chronic, or life-threatening problems, you know, cancer, multiple sclerosis, and they often include the most expensive medications. So they're allowed to steer for specialty drugs. I didn't put it in the article. Mm-hmm. They're also allowed to steer towards mail order, mm-hmm. Which is another big problem because big PBMs have, yes. So they can steer you towards, what the exception made was, you're allowed to steer towards mail order as long as you don't auto-enroll the patient in the first 3 months. So they'll just wait 3 months and then yeah. they'll auto-enroll you in their mail order. And this is where these PBMs are making their money. I know I'm really like dorky about this stuff, and I'm sorry.
No.
I just think that your own money is very yeah. interesting. We should all care about where it's going.
So part of this is, if I can just interject, that these pharmacy benefit managers, and, you know, I have it, so the thing to know is that they paint themselves as, hey, we're like a concierge. So you don't have to deal with directly with the pharmaceutical or your insurer. We're the middle person, and we're like a concierge. We're here for you. That's how they word things when they email you and they call you, and you think, oh, this is like an advocate person, not realizing that the pharmacy benefit manager works for the big company. They're all in cahoots, right?
Oh, cahoots is a good way to put it. It's a cartel, man. And you know what's even worse? So now they They are allowed to steer with exceptions, and that's why I have to say that I disagreed with what Governor Josh Shapiro said. And I also disagreed because he came out with a tweet, I believe, over the weekend. We signed landmark reforms into law to deliver real relief. I mean, I don't call it real relief because they're trumpeting the transparency that was passed. And, you know, like one of the complaints is these pharmacy benefit managers are, they're given the money from their parent company, the insurers, or sometimes they're given the money from Medicaid or Medicare, and then they get to they create the formularies.
And they drive up prices, in other words.
Yes. Well, they can pick a more expensive drug to put on the formulary. And what helps them decide what to put on the formulary? Well, they claim this is not true, but I don't know how it couldn't be. They are allowed to accept kickbacks from pharmaceutical companies. So it's pay to play. A pharmaceutical company pays what they call rebates. I call them kickbacks because PBMs have the right to receive kickbacks. That's a federal statute that happened years ago.
And the FTC has been investigating that, as you write.
Yes, yes. Lina Khan, this is one very bright spot in the Biden administration. Lina Khan has been doing fantastic stuff on PBMs, I think. A lot of people may disagree with her, but you know what? If you're putting this information in front of the public, then great. The best thing I can say about this bill is hopefully people will start paying attention. But one of the big issues is that the rebates and the fees that are collected by these PBMs are not transparent. Neither is the money they pay to the pharmacists and that kind of stuff, but that's a separate issue. So they accept these kickbacks and fees, price concessions, from the pharmaceutical companies, and there's little to no transparency over this. Some of it slips out. You know, a couple of years ago, people figured that the rebates for insulin was 80% of the cost of insulin. So the PBMs were actually making more than the pharmaceutical companies.
Which is
how they make their money. Yeah, I know, it's gross. I mean, like, I've given lectures to this to the Los Angeles, like, health department. Like, I come home from a shift and put a suit on underneath my scrubs and, you know, explain to them what's going on, and they're all, like, freaking out. But in any case, the transparency, we had some decent stuff that came through Eugene DePasquale when he was auditor general. He was trying to demand more transparency for the PBMs in general, the rebates, the money they spent on pharmacies. And I'm told, although I can't find it, that there was something that was stuffed in a law that allowed the auditor general to really audit in there, although no one's done a great audit on them. And so now this law, here's what happens to the transparency. This is unbelievable to me. They have to announce their fees and their rebates in aggregate. In aggregate means like for all the drugs together and all the PBMs together and all the insurance companies together. Here's how much rebate was collected. Here's how much fee was collected. And then they have to say how much they retained only for the rebates. I didn't include that in the article, too, because it gets really complicated, right? But the bottom line is you don't get to see this for an individual drug, an individual PBM, an individual insurance company, or even an individual employer. And, like, why is this important? Well, you know, I mentioned even like, the federal stuff going on is great. There's a new bill, actually, out by a Republican from Tennessee, Representative Harshberger, Diane Harshberger, who's a pharmacist, and Representative, she's a Republican, Representative Jake Auchincloss from Massachusetts, who's a Democrat. And Auchincloss pointed out at a recent hearing, like, CVS is marking up for a particular company, they're marking up a cancer drug by 67,000%. We're not talking chump change.
Yeah.
There's a 38,000% markup on a drug for multiple sclerosis. So now, if our transparency is in aggregate, and then we can't see what gets retained,
for
they
each
can
one.
Shift. Yes, you know, no one's going to be able to see for their individual
fudge.
Drug, their individual. Well, and I don't call it transparency.
Yeah,
it's this got, and this was being changed at the last minute. You have got to be kidding me.
The final thing I want to get to, and, I know that we're really zooming out and there's so much in here, so I hope that you can come back. And, you know, it's my first day back from a week off, and there's so much breaking right now. But I do want to get to this point that you do write in the DelawareValleyJournal.com, you know, article, beautifully written, Dr. Mass. But, you know, you talk about injectables and your concern about young children. Can you just headline that for me as to what's going on there with the ages?
Yeah, see, it's even worse. Remember how I mentioned the specialty drug?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's a certain number of specialty drugs. I mentioned they were more expensive, and that was the exception made for steering. But they're allowing pharmacists to inject biologics, which...
Puberty blockers?
Sure could be. I mean... I wasn't in the room to make the decision, but it made no sense to me because they expanded the ability of pharmacies to give vaccines. I mean, if you have informed consent, not my business, but I think that went down to age 5. And then the pharmacy techs, I believe, are allowed to do the vaccinations down to 13. It expanded the pharmacy's ability to do certain testing like strep test, COVID test, flu test, that kind of thing. I actually kind of have to say I don't love that because what happens, like the patient goes and gets the test and then they're calling the primary and you know, without getting seen, now the primary has to deal with, without getting paid,
right,
something for which they didn't order. But that's another story. But like this whole idea of like, you know, why are you giving vaccines down to age 5 and then this level of age 8? I mean, puberty starts at 9. Yeah. To me, it certainly seems like it could be for the ability for CVS to give puberty blockers. Now, why should we all care? Because CVS can steer towards their expensive specialty drugs. They can call puberty blockers a specialty drug. They can administer the specialty drug. And we might,
to an 8-year-old,
Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, yes, down to 8, we might be paying more for all of this because they're not usually transparent. And there's no dedicated transparency for administration fees. What are they going to collect off of that? And are we in the Commonwealth going to be paying more for this? And we can't see what we're paying for a therapy that I just... in England, it was just announced that their Supreme Court held up the right to block youth from getting this therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you agree or not that a person identifies as the opposite gender from the body or the chromosomes in which they were born in, the fact is like, you know, all of us, we all pay for therapies. It's part of why healthcare is so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't see what they're paying and they're picking a more expensive drug and collecting more off of administration, and we're all paying for something that's questionable as to whether it's got good risk-benefit ratio, I don't know. I'm not convinced this is a great thing. I think there's too much bad in this bill.
Yeah, it's a shame. And as you pointed out, these last-minute changes to this in the darkness of, you know, you think about it, last minute changes during the summer when everybody is, you know, the kids aren't in school, it's not the fall. I mean, it feels like they really chose this time to just slip it right in there. Dr. Mary Mass, your local doctor, you're fantastic, and I appreciate you so much. I hope you come back and we can talk more on this issue as well as so much happening in our region. But we have so much breaking today. I've got to take a break, but I really appreciate you coming on. And
thanks for having me
for
so long, letting me talk. And yeah, we'll talk about the empty nest too, important topic.
Among other things. Thank you, Mary. And your vegetable garden, too. I covet your vegetables. Thank you so much, Doctor.